Hi, my name is Kirk Kinder, and this is Saving Yourself from Wall Street, the podcast for people who want to avoid Wall Street's sales tactics, high cost, and conflicted advice so they can take control of their financial life. So let's get to it. Today, I have the pleasure of speaking with Matt Hogan, the Global Head of Research for Bitwise Asset Management. Now, any serious person in the financial planning industry knows Matt's work. I've been following and learning from Matt for well over a decade now, and I follow his moves closely. Matt was a leader in the exchange-traded fund space, starting out as a writer for ETF.com way back in 2006, just as ETFs were really gaining traction in the financial world. He worked his way up to become the CEO of ETF.com before they sold the company. Now, he's always been a thought leader in the ETF space, co-authoring the CFA Institute's monograph on ETFs, appearing on the Barron's ETF Roundtable, and developing the largest conference on ETFs in the entire nation. So when Matt joined Bitwise Asset Management, I took notice. Bitwise pioneered the first cryptocurrency index fund and is developing unique strategies in the crypto asset space. Much like ETFs when Matt entered the arena, cryptocurrencies are in their infancy and the eventual usage and potential are still unknown. But Matt is bringing his strategic vision and keen analytical abilities to the industry. We are lucky enough today to get his thoughts in this podcast. If you've been curious about crypto assets, you're not really sure where the industry is headed, you should enjoy our discussion with Matt. Okay, Matt, well, thanks so much for taking some time to do our podcast. Really appreciate you helping us out.
Thank you very much for having me on, Kirk. I'm really excited to be here.
Yeah, well, Matt, I mean, I've been following you for quite a few years with what you were doing in the ETF space. And, I was just wondering, so what kind of made you go from, you know, one of the thought leaders in the ETF field and switch over to crypto?
That's a great question. Yeah, I was fortunate enough, like you, to get involved in the ETF space in the early days, building a company called ETF.com. And if you remember back in maybe 2002, 2003, people didn't know what ETFs were. People referred to them as weapons of mass destruction for finance. People thought they were risky. They didn't understand how they worked. But a few of us saw their potential to lower costs and increase tax efficiency. And I was able to get in early and help build a business that educated advisors about how to use them properly in the portfolio. And that was fantastic. And I built that business for 15 years and ultimately sold it in 2015. When I looked around after that on what I wanted to do next, I was looking for the next major area that was disruptive to the financial space, where I thought that maybe the quality of information wasn't very good out there. Maybe the level of understanding wasn't very good out there, but the potential to have a major positive impact on both society and portfolios was there. And crypto fit that bill. When I joined Bitwise in 2017, I think the quality of information being delivered about crypto was very poor. Crypto was the land of hyperbole. Either it was going to change the world and make everything perfect, or it was going to destroy the world and bring everybody down. And I saw an opportunity to come in, provide some high quality education, and get involved in a business that I thought was providing a very rational and sensible product that would allow investors to get exposure to this space. So it's really just trying to be on the right side of major trends in the financial industry that brought me here.
Okay. And sticking with that a little bit. So, there's a lot of people, they don't really understand what cryptocurrencies or crypto assets are. So yeah. Could you kind of give the listeners a 30,000 foot view of cryptos?
Sure.
As you see it?
Yeah, I love it. The reason I find crypto and blockchain interesting is it is the tool that allows us to move money over the internet. If you think about the world that exists today, there are a few things that always stand out to me as seemingly absurd. For instance, when I go and pay my online bank account, and I go into my online bank account and I pay my internet bill, it takes 4 or 5 days to hit my account. Or if I go and wire money to a friend overseas, it takes multiple days and costs multiple percents of money to move that money from here to, say, Hong Kong. And that strikes me as crazy in a world where I can open up my phone and read any book or watch any movie or do a free video FaceTime call with friends anywhere around the world. How is it possible that it takes multiple days to pay my online bills or to send money by a wire to someone else in another country? Crypto fixes all that. It allows us to move money over the internet in a native fashion, in a peer-to-peer way without a central intermediary. And for that reason, I think it will eventually disrupt big chunks of the financial universe. Now, you're already seeing some of the early applications. So Bitcoin, the largest crypto asset, the first blockchain, is disrupting the non-sovereign store of value space. It's emerged as a form of digital gold that particularly young people, but increasingly older generations and institutions are using in place of gold to store value. I think you'll see other major breakthroughs in the years to come. But if you want to think about why crypto is important, just think about it as the way money moves over the internet. You'll be pretty close to understanding what it is.
Okay. Well, you know, you've talked a lot in your interviews talking about crypto assets versus cryptocurrency. But, you know, based on what you just said, like, why would you talk about it as a crypto asset and not just focus on the currency?
Yeah, I do think of it as a crypto asset and not as a currency. I think the word cryptocurrency confuses people because they expect to go down to their local Starbucks and buy their coffee with Bitcoin. But that's not really what it's set up to do. It's not particularly good at small payments that you make at your local retailer. What it's good is storing value in a non-sovereign sense or moving large amounts of money over long distances. It's not as good as cash for buying a coffee. So I think cryptocurrency confuses people. Crypto assets opens up this idea of what does it mean to have money over the internet, which I think is a bigger picture idea and a more realistic understanding of what crypto and blockchain is.
Okay. So if people, you know, I get a lot of questions now, should they invest in crypto? What do you see as the main reasons why somebody would want to invest in crypto assets?
Crypto assets combine three things that are very hard to combine in an investment. So first, they've historically had high returns. Bitcoin's up about 85% this year. It's up about 850% over the last 3 years. It's up something like 10 million percent over the last 10 years. But it's historically had significantly high returns. It also has virtually no correlation to any other major asset class. So it has virtually no correlation to stocks, virtually no correlations to bonds, virtually no correlations to, let's say, VIX or equity volatility. It's a non-correlated asset, and it's also liquid. And when you combine an asset with high potential returns, no correlations to other assets, and liquidity, it can be a very valuable contributor to a portfolio. So even a small allocation to crypto can help boost your Sharpe ratio or help add returns to a portfolio that's otherwise struggling. I would caution, though, crypto is not for everyone. It is a very volatile asset. And so I worry about how people react from a behavioral perspective when it comes to crypto. I study this space 24/7, 365. I have no idea if the price of Bitcoin is going to go up, down, or sideways over the next week or 2 weeks or quarter, or maybe even half a year. What I do have a high degree of confidence in 10 years from now or 5 years from now, crypto will be much more important than it is today. And investors who are able to invest and hold for the long term will, I think, be rewarded. But it is important to keep that volatility in mind when you invest.
Okay, so I mean, it's obviously going to be difficult then to do any kind of valuation metrics with crypto. So is today's investor basically going to invest just hoping that the adoption continues to grow and just one of those, as more people come in, the price would generally rise? Is that kind of what you're thinking?
I think that's a reasonable approach, but I think I can give you a framework.
Okay. So
Bitcoin, I think its primary use is as I mentioned, a non-sovereign store of value, or if you want to call it a digital gold. It's a way for people to take money out of the fiat system and put it in a scarce asset. And it's the first scarce digital asset. And so I think it's reasonable to look at the value of something like Bitcoin and compare it with the value that's invested today in gold or other non-sovereign stores of value like certain forms of real estate or art or other collectibles. The gold market is about a $7 trillion market. Other non-sovereign stores of value add about another 30-ish trillion dollars on. So if you think about the entire non-sovereign store of value market, the place where people are taking money out of the fiat system and investing it in scarce assets, that about a $37 trillion market. Bitcoin today is about $125 billion asset. So it's penetrated a very small fraction of that market. And I think the question with Bitcoin specifically that people can ask is, as you look out 3, 5, or 10 years, as you look out as millennials who are now, say, 38 years old at the top end, enter their prime earning years and start investing more in these sorts of assets. Digital asset. Right now, the answer to that is about 1%. If you think 10 years from now, the answer to that will be more aligned with 10%, then you would expect a 10x return for Bitcoin from here. So that's sort of a framework to how to think about the largest crypto assets. The valuation metrics, once you get away from Bitcoin into coins like Ethereum or XRP or Litecoin or Monero, are slightly more complex. But I think you can use that comparison to gold as a simple way of understanding how to think about Bitcoin's valuation.
Okay. And one thing that I thought was really fascinating, I was reading one of your thought pieces, and it showed the correlation between just all the different cryptos is extremely low. So
yeah,
there's really no, that's not like a perfectly correlated asset either.
It's amazing, but I think it speaks to something important, which is that each individual crypto asset is going after a different market. You have to remember that these crypto assets are based on software, and the software that's underlying Bitcoin is very different from the software that's underlying Ethereum, which is very different than the software that's underlying XRP. Bitcoin software is optimized to be an extremely secure way to store value. It's not optimized actually for speed. It's not optimized to be programmable. You compare that with Ethereum, which maybe isn't as secure as Bitcoin, but can be programmed to do very different things, can be programmed to replace escrow agents, can be programmed to replace investment banks as a way to raise capital. They're doing very different things in the market. They're attacking different addressable markets in the same way that, say, Microsoft software attacks a different market than Oracle attacks a different market than Salesforce. And because they're going after different markets, they're driven by different news events. So while people who don't spend most of their time in the crypto industry assume they're all going after the same market, assume they're all trying to be this new global currency, in reality, they're attacking different parts of the financial stack. And therefore, they're driven by different news events. And that manifests in the relatively low correlations that you see and the relatively wide dispersion of returns that you see between different crypto assets.
Okay. And it seems like at Bitwise, you know, one of the funds you offer actually really focuses on diversifying amongst the several crypto assets. and I guess that's probably the reason why.
That's exactly part of the reason why. And the other part of the reason is that, look, this is an early stage disruptive technology. And we all know from early stage disruptive technologies that things aren't set in stone, right? Before there was Facebook, there was MySpace and Friendster. I'm old enough that my family owned a Betamax and got on the wrong side of the Betamax VHS. But we've seen Blu-ray and HD DVD. There are plenty of examples where the first mover in technology didn't end up being the ultimate winner, but the space became very important. I think what you get when you get a diversified fund like the Bitwise 10, which holds the 10 largest crypto assets in a market cap weighted setting, kind of like the S&P 500 of crypto, is you're able to make a bet on crypto and blockchain in general. And whether it's Bitcoin that's the eventual winner, or it's Ethereum, or it's XRP, or it's some new asset that emerges, you're guaranteed to have exposure to that. So for me, it's the most sensible way to play the crypto market is to understand that it's early, it's disruptive, we don't know exactly how it will play out. So let's make sure we're invested not just in one asset, but in the top 10 assets in the space.
Okay. Well, since we're sort of talking about that, could you just elaborate a little bit more about kind of the wide range of product offerings that Bitwise has today? You've hit on this one, but I know you have others as well.
Yeah, all Bitwise is trying to do is provide safe, simple exposure to the wealth creation that's taking place in the crypto market. So our flagship product, as we mentioned, is a market cap weighted index of the top 10 crypto assets called the Bitwise 10. It's available in a private fund to accredited investors. It has a simple management fee. It offers weekly liquidity. And the assets are stored with an institutional custodian that has insurance in place on those assets from Lloyd's of London. The other funds we offer are a standalone Bitcoin fund, which just invests in Bitcoin and custodies those assets at Fidelity, and a standalone Ethereum fund, which just invests in Ethereum, which is the second largest crypto assets, and custodies those assets with Coinbase Custody, another institutional custodian. But we're really trying to be an access vehicle to this space. We know that people find this space confusing. We know that there is some risk in this space. It's difficult to know how to turn to. So we're trying to build sort of gold standard access vehicles that make it easy for financial advisors and accredited investors to gain exposure to the space in a familiar fund format.
Okay. And you kind of mentioned something here that really has been in the news a lot. You mentioned, safeguarding through secure custodian. Yeah. You see in the news all the times about, theft of crypto. So can you elaborate a little bit more about how you guys kind of take that security in your products?
Yeah. First, I should say it's really important. One of the things that makes crypto unique is it's effectively a bearer asset. So if someone steals the password that unlocks your crypto, they've stolen that money from you, just like if they took a $100 bill out of your wallet and walked away. So custody and security is paramount. And it's difficult to know who to turn to. So what we do at Bitwise is each year we do an RFP of all the regulated custodians, all the institutional custodians that are regulated under state trust charters. And we choose the best in class custodian to store our assets in a completely offline setting. In our case, our funds are custodied either with Fidelity Digital Assets or with Coinbase Custody. Both have significant insurance in place on those custody assets through Lloyd's of London. And what we're trying to do is help advisors sleep at night. I know people have seen the headlines of this exchange or that exchange losing assets or people losing their password or having their phone ported and losing access to their Coinbase account. We try to take care of all that by working with best in breed institutional custodians and storing our assets in an offline secure format.
Okay, great. That's because that's been something you hear about that a lot. Press loves to bring that up when they're trying to bring down crypto, and that's usually the first place they go. Do you ever see a point where I know they've been trying to have discussions with the SEC on getting either an ETF or even some sort of fund in place? Do you ever see it where it'll be open to people who aren't accredited investors, or do you think that's quite a ways down the road?
I think it's down the road, but I'm hopeful and close to certain that it will eventually happen. If you've been around the ETF space for a while, that it often takes years for the SEC to approve new asset classes, right? It took 4 or 5 years for them to approve bonds. It took 10 years for them to approve non-transparent active, 8 years for leverage. So it's not unusual that it takes their time. I think the SEC is getting closer and closer to approving a crypto ETF. That's driven in part by their deep engagement with the space, but also in part by just the phenomenal evolution of the space that's taken place over the last 2 years. It's difficult for us in the crypto industry to admit, but a few years ago, this was a very nascent industry in many ways. Fidelity was not a custodian. There were no regulated insured custodians 2 years ago. Now there are 10. There are no major OTC market makers making markets in Bitcoin or other assets a few years ago. Now Jane Street and Susquehanna and other brand names are making markets in those assets, and spreads have collapsed to a penny. There weren't regulations in place that required crypto exchanges to monitor the activity on those exchanges for fraud and manipulative activity. Now, most of the major crypto exchanges have surveillance agreements in place that are monitoring those things. Another example, there was no regulated futures market Now the single largest Bitcoin market in the US is the CME Bitcoin futures market, which is a fully regulated market under the CFTC. So the space has gone from relatively grassroots to really quite institutional over the last 2 years. And I think that has gotten us a lot closer to an ETF. So that's a long-winded way of saying that it will eventually get there. It's just a matter of when and not if.
Yeah, no, that's a great point. I remember I started off speaking at some ETF conferences, and in 03, 04, there were people that said, we'll never see a municipal bond ETF. Just can't do it. No liquidity. You know, it's just, there's no way you can do it. And yeah, everything, basically every asset class has been ETF-ized, if you will.
That's right.
At some point. So, okay. No, that's great. Well, yeah. So if I'm an investor listening to this, the next thing I'm going to start thinking is, you know, how much of my portfolio would it be appropriate to put in here? Obviously it's kind of the uncorrelated asset or the alternative investment. So, you know, it's not going to be a huge portion, hopefully, but like how would you answer that?
I'll give you three data points that might frame it. So in my personal portfolio, which is just a well-diversified portfolio of ETFs, I maintain a 2.5% allocation to crypto. On a back-tested basis, 2.5% tests out as the sweet spot where you've historically gotten added incremental return without adding any significant risk. And I'm a pretty wimpy investor, so I don't want to layer on too much risk into my portfolio. Our average client, the best we can guess, has about a 2.2% allocation to crypto the last time we looked. A lot of people who come into our funds, however, start with just a 1% allocation. 1% doesn't sound like much. Most people can tolerate the idea of losing 1%. But historically, on a back-tested basis, when you're talking about an asset that's up 850% over the last 3 years, and many multiples of that over the last 5 years, even a 1% allocation can be significant. I think the most important thing for investors and advisors to do, particularly as we stare down a new decade where the expected returns on stocks and bonds may be a little bit challenged, is to get off zero and get a small allocation to the space. So somewhere in that 1 to 2.5% range, I think, is the sweet spot. We see people go as high as 5. Above 5, I think you're layering on really significant risk, considering how volatile the asset is.
Okay. No, that's great. And so I guess your advice also, since it is such a volatile asset, is just at the time you feel like you're ready to do it, don't worry about, am I hitting it, you know, the low point, the high point, what it's going to do the next, you know, 6 months, 1 year, even 2 years, just kind of make the plunge. Or would you recommend if I'm going to go to 2.5%, maybe I just sort of dollar cost average in? Or
yeah, I hate to give you this example, this answer, but the truth is it all depends on your behavioral tolerance and how iron your stomach is. If you know you're the kind of person who, if you invest the full amount today and you see it drop 20%, then you should dollar cost average in. The data suggests that dollar cost averaging can be a very sound strategy in the crypto market. It certainly has behavioral benefits. If you're the kind of person who can tolerate that kind of volatility, then just make the allocation and be done with it. We see clients doing both. The majority, I think, look at this and say, hey, it's a 1% allocation to start. I can tolerate that kind of risk in my portfolio. I'm just going to do it and see how it behaves. So that's the dominant use case, but don't be afraid to dollar cost average it.
Okay, great. Well, I really appreciate your time. I think we hit on some really good topics, and I think as more people learn about the crypto assets, they're definitely going to be open to, you know, investing in it as this, you know, you're doing a great job of educating folks, and I'd highly recommend that they go to Bitwise's site to take a look, you've got some great research there. Are there any other avenues, Matt, that you have that, you know, Twitter, Facebook, anything like that, that people could check out your work?
Sure. I'd love for people to, first of all, thanks for having me on. I think you're doing a service to your listeners by providing them exposure to things like crypto. You can follow me on Twitter at Matt_Hogan, Hogan. I'm also a columnist at Forbes. So you can look for my columns on Forbes.com. Or come to our website and sign up for our monthly crypto investor letter, where we try to digest the most important news over the past month in a way that that regular investors can understand. So those are three avenues. And I'd love to see you guys out there and love to stay in touch.
Okay. Well, thank you so much, Matt. I appreciate your time.
Thank you.
Well, that's it for this episode of the Saving Yourself from Wall Street podcast. I appreciate you stopping in. As always, you can find our podcast along with other articles and videos at savingyourselffromwallstreet.com. And now, the lawyers say hi.
Saving Yourself from Wall Street is hosted by Kirk Kinder. Kirk Kinder is the owner of Picket Fence Financial, a fee-only financial planning firm. Picket Fence Financial is regulated by the states of Maryland and Florida in accordance and in compliance with securities laws and regulations. Picket Fence Financial does not render or offer to render personalized financial or tax advice through the Saving Yourself from Wall Street podcast. The information provided is for informational purposes only and does not constitute financial, tax, investment, or legal advice.